Well, we're continuing our discussion of how to build lifelong zeal. And Philip suggests that it's important as a second step for us to take time to prepare our environment so that we can be zealous. I have to say that I don't always think about this, particularly in my own life. I have a tendency to want to skip right down to the end. And when I skip right down to the end, I can't seem to capture what I'm really trying to capture. So let's give this some thought. Let's talk about preparing our environment. And we're going to do that by beginning in Proverbs 4 at verse 23. He says, the wise man said, "Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life." And of course, I am quoting the English Standard Translation. Some other translations say, "Keep your heart with all diligence," and makes sense. What do you see here?
You're in charge of your own thoughts.
Okay, that's true.
You need to be searching them out, watching over them.
Good point. Yeah, Carol.
Where your heart is, that's where which direction your life is going to go, whether it's to darkness or to light.
Okay. And he makes that point, Luke 6 at verse 45. The good person out of the good treasure of his heart produces good. The evil person out of the evil treasure produces evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. You know, most of us have experienced at some point in our life being in an environment where we had to control what we say. And when we're in that environment, we can do a pretty good job. I remember when I was dating Kim and I would go over to her house. Well, I had to think about what I was going to say before I said it. At least I did until I got to know her dad. And once I got to know him, then I didn't have to worry about that so much. But I was really minding my P's and Q's, right? And we're all capable of doing that, at least for a very short time. But like somebody said, that works until you hit your thumb with a hammer. And then what's really inside, what you're really thinking is going to come out because you hit your thumb with a hammer. Everybody noticed for the last couple of weeks I had to wear a bandage on my wrist. That's because when I was trying to take the bike rack off of my truck, the wrench slipped off the bike rack and caught my wrist in between the wrench and the frame of my truck, and it really hurt. And so I've been going to the hospital and participating in a research protocol involving exercise. Somebody noticed that I had the Band-Aid on my wrist, and they said, "Did you let out some cuss words when you did that?" And I said, "No, fortunately I didn't. What was in my heart really came out because it hurt really bad." And with enough practice, and if we prepare our heart correctly, then we can avoid that kind of thing. Yeah, Kim.
Can you go back a slide?
I'm sorry?
Can you go back a slide
Okay.
to the first to Proverbs 4:23? My takeaway from that is it says, "Keep your heart with all vigilance." And when I think about keeping something, when I think about like keeping a garden or keeping your house or keeping, it's to take care of and to protect. and to provide for. And I think that's the, of course, the point of the lesson is to prepare your heart. But when we keep something, we value it, when we take care of it. And I've used the example before because it's something that comes up in my life a lot is sometimes when I'm watching the news and I just, and I get so upset. So sometimes it's just better to keep my heart from that stuff, just turn it off, walk away, take care of what I'm responsible for, and not let that distract me and detract me from my service to God, because it can. It could really take me away from what I value because I'm not keeping and protecting my heart. So I focused on that word keep in here because I think that it's active, kind of like what Bob said, but I think it's more than just what we do. It's because what we do is going to be reflective of how we keep our heart. So that was kind of my focus on that verse, is that keep.
Very good point. Very good point. Somebody else over here had their hand up. Did I miss it? Yeah, Bill?
I can't place it, but I think it was shortly after the law was given in the Old Testament that the people were advised to walk and talk about this law every day.
Yeah, Deuteronomy, when Moses is talking to the children of Israel, three times in Deuteronomy, he says, talk about the law with your kids while you're walking, when you sit down to eat dinner, when you're just doing the ordinary things of life. Yeah, very good point.
I have to bring up a movie because the fiddler on the roof and how Tevye walked and talked with God. It was a stupid movie, but it was a great movie. And that was a fantastic example. You know, I can't forget that.
Yeah, that's I hadn't thought about that movie, but that's
one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, it's a good illustration. And that was the first movie that Kim and I went to see when we were dating, by the way. So I have Kim to blame for that movie. Or Kim has me to blame for that movie. I don't know what it was. Yeah, Carol.
As Kim is talking about, to keep is a premeditated type thing. When you come home and you're going to keep that picture that you just got of your parents or somebody else, you don't just toss it on the table and get to it and say, oh, I'll get around to it later. It's not yet like your glasses or your car keys that you set it down and you're not thinking about it. You're keeping it when you put it where you put it down, you'll know where it is when you pick it up. And it's always involved in your life.
Well, my version says watch over your heart.
Okay.
And that would mean whatever you watch over, you keep it safe. If you're watching over something, you're keeping it safe.
Good point. Yeah, Mandy?
I think the other piece is it implies that this is continuous. It is not a one-time action. It is a daily constancy in order to keep that or to keep watch, right? And comparing between the passage in Proverbs and in Luke, when we're looking at those two, the idea is that this is a constant exposure. And like, you know, Mom was noting turn off the news if that's what is being a distraction from keeping your heart pure.
Yeah, good point. Just to reinforce your point, you know how they say to remember to get your umbrella when you carry your umbrella into a store or into a restaurant? You know how they say to remember to get your umbrella? Put your keys in the other pocket and you'll always remember your umbrella. I do that all the time. How many of us know exactly where our phone is? Guys wear, keep their phone in their pocket. And I one of the easiest things for me to do to remember to do something is to move my phone and my keys to the other pocket, because I'll immediately notice it. We do the same thing with a ring. If you wear a ring and suddenly you get up and you forget to put the ring on, you'll notice the ring. Okay? Just like your watch or something like that. Yeah, Kim, did you have a comment? Okay.
Trying to get the connection.
Well, the connection is, it's an everyday thing. Make this something that you are so used to doing that if you didn't do it, it would upset your apple cart. For many, many years, the trash always went out on Sunday night because they picked up the trash on Monday morning. And if we ever canceled worship when I was preaching in Alaska and we didn't have worship on Sunday, I couldn't remember when to take out the garbage. Always miss the garbage day if we canceled worship on Sunday. So what we're talking about here is making things so ingrained that this is just what we do. Okay. And he suggests that you look at 2 Kings, the 23rd chapter. It's a story about Josiah. And Josiah was perhaps one of the best kings that ever ruled in Jerusalem. He comes to the throne, and Jerusalem is at a low point. And he decides that he's going to restore the worship of Jehovah. And so he does a lot of things. Let's kind of divvy this up and everybody read, three or four verses and then pass it off to the next guy. That sound like a plan? 2 Kings 23, we're going to start at verse 24, or start at verse 4. Well, we could start at verse 1, because that kind of sets the stage. So let's just start over here with Bill. You want to start in 2 Kings 23 at verse 1?
Yeah. And the king sent, and they gathered unto him all the elders of Judah and of Jerusalem. The king went up to the house of Jehovah, and all the men of Judah and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem with him, and the priests and the prophets and all the people, both small and great. And he read in their ears all the words of the book of the covenant, which was found in the house of Jehovah. And the king stood by the pillar and made a covenant before Jehovah, to walk after Jehovah and to keep his covenant, his commandments, and his testimonies, and his statutes, with all his heart and all his soul, to confirm the words of this covenant that were written in this book.
Okay.
And all the people stood to the covenant.
Pass it off to Lee.
The king commanded his Hilkiah, the high priest, the priest of the second order, the doorkeeper, to bring out of the temple of the Lord all vessels that were made for Baal, Ashereth, and for all the hosts of heaven. And he burned them outside Jerusalem in the field of Kidron and carried the ashes to Bethel. And he did away with the idolatrous priest whom the king of Judah had appointed to burn incense in the high places in the cities of Judah and the surrounding areas of Jerusalem. Also those who burned incense to Baal and the sun and to the moon and to the constellations and to all the hosts of heaven. And he brought out the Ashtoreth from the house of the Lord outside of Jerusalem to the brook of Kidron burned at the brook of Kidron and ground it to dust and threw it dust on the graves of the common people.
Yeah, but by the way, Asherah are the gods that they worship. So they that's a kind of a catch-all phrase for the gods that they worshiped, the Asherah gods. They tended to be nature gods. So that's what he's doing. He's cleaning up Jerusalem. Let's see. Who wants some dye? You go next.
He also broke down the houses of the male cult prostitutes, which were in the house of the Lord, where the women were weaving hangings for Asherah. Then he brought out all the priests from the cities of Judah, and they defiled the high places where the priests had burned incense from Geba to Sheba, and he broke down the high places of the gates, which were at the entrance of the gate of Joshua, the governor of the city, which were on one's left at the city gate. Nevertheless, the priests of the high places did not go up to the altar of the Lord in Jerusalem, but they ate unleavened bread among their brothers.
Okay, next. Verse 10.
He also took all top down, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom, that no man might, his son or his daughter, pass through the fire for Molech.
Okay, let me stop you right there. Molech was the god that they worshipped, and they would actually sacrifice their children to this god. If you look at the figure of this god, it was basically hollow with its arms outstretched. And they would build a fire inside this statue, and they would take their children, and once the arms got red hot, they would put their children on the arms of this altar. So they would sacrifice even their children to this god of Molech. Okay, let's go.
And he did away with the horses which the kings of Judah had given to the son at the entrance of the house of the Lord, by the chamber of Nathan Melech the official, which was in the precincts, and he burned the chariots of the son with fire.
Okay, next.
And my glasses. He pulled down the altars the kings of Judah had erected on the road near the upper room of Ahaz, and the altars Manasseh had built in the two courts of the temple of the Lord. He removed them from there, smashed them to pieces, and threw the rubble into the Kidron Valley.
Yeah, stop again, just real quickly. Manasseh was his grandfather. So Manasseh is probably one of the worst kings that Israel ever had. And Josiah decides he's going to have to do away with everything that they've done. Okay, continue.
The king also desecrated the high places that were east of Jerusalem on the south of the hill of Perosha, the one Solomon, king of Israel, had built for Ashtoreth, the vile goddess of the Sidonians, for Chemeth, the vile god of Moab, and for Molech, the detestable god of the people of Ammon. Josiah smashed the sacred stones and cut down the Asherah poles and covered the sites of human bones.
Yeah, remember Solomon had these wives that they were wives, but they were basically political alliances. He takes the oldest daughter of the king of some country to be his wife. And Solomon, later in his life, would build an altar where his new wife could worship. And so these things proliferated throughout the nation of Judah. And it was all because of what Solomon did when he took these wives. So let's continue.
Moreover, the altar that was at Bethel and the high place, which Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel sin, and made both that altar and the high place. He broke down and he burned the high place and burnt it to powder and burned the wooden image. As Josiah turned, he saw the tombs that were there on the mountain. And he sent and took the bones out of the tombs and burned them on the altar and defiled it according to the words of the Lord, which the man of God proclaimed, who proclaimed his word. Then he said, "What gravestone is this that I see?" So the man in the city told him, "It is the tomb of the man of God who came from Judah and proclaimed these things which you have done against the altar of Bethel." You want somebody else to read?
Okay, Manny?
He said, "Let him alone. Let no one disturb his bones." So they left his bones undisturbed with the bones of the prophet who came from Samaria. Josiah also removed all the houses of the high places which were in the cities of Samaria, which the kings of Israel had made provoking the Lord. And he did to them just as he had done in Bethel. All the priests of the high places who were there, he slaughtered on the altars and burned human bones on them. And then he returned to Jerusalem.
Okay. Let's see. Nolan?
The king commanded all people, keep the Passover of the Lord your God as written in the book of the covenant. No such Passover had ever been kept at the time of the judges who judged Israel for the entire time of the kings of Israel and Judah. But in the 18th year of King Josiah, this Passover was observed to the Lord of Jerusalem. In addition, Josiah removed the mediums, the spiritists, the household idols, images, and all the detestable things that were seen in the land of Judah and in Jerusalem. He did this in order to carry out the words of the law that were written in the book of Hilkiah, the priest found in the Lord's temple.
You want to read them again?
I'm not ready.
All right, one more verse. I got it.
Okay.
Before him, there was no king like him who turned to the Lord with all his mind, with all his heart, with all his strength, according to the law of Moses. And no one like him arose after.
Okay. So Josiah does a lot to get ready for Israel to really be returning to God. And Philip makes the point that what he's doing is he's preparing the ground. He looks around him, he sees the situation, and he does several things. First, he removes some things. Then he replaces, the next thing he does is he removes them forever. He tears them down. He doesn't just move it to the back of his closet. He tears it down. And then he replaces it with something that's going to lead people to God. Okay? So let's go back and think about what he removed. And Kim mentioned something about this as she was talking about keeping your heart. It's important for us to remove some things from our lives because those things are going to get in our way. They may not get in our way today. It may not be for a while, but we need to remove those things from our lives. And he says there's a category, or there are four categories of things that we need to remove from our life if we're really going to pursue zeal. First, he says, remove physical objects. Remove things and people that promote sin. Remove the places where you sin and remove those things that do bring passing benefit. So let's talk about those four things. First, physical objects. What kinds of objects can lead us away from God?
Television.
Okay. That's a good example. And You know, I know a lot of people who have decided that they're just not going to have television in their house because of the influence that they're bringing into their house. So they decide, we're not going to do that. Now, I know some people who've decided to do that for a little bit different reason. They said it just promotes this culture of consumerism, and they don't want their children to be educated in consumerism. And that makes some sense, right? I mean, what happens to kids right around Christmas time? They start showing the advertisements for all these toys that are so cool, and that's the toy that your child wants at Christmas time. Other thoughts about television? That's a little bit different than removing it because it's leading you away from God. They're removing it because they just don't want the influence. But nevertheless, makes some sense, doesn't it? What other things lead us away from God or can lead us away from God?
In the text, it talks about closing down the male prostitute centers at the temple and stuff. So the things that you lust after sexually that promote you to look in the wrong direction. And that can be anywhere from television to dirty books to
National Geographic
to sports show. I mean, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, I'm really having trouble hearing people tonight because the pump is running in the baptistry. And it's, yeah, I know you guys can't hear it, but it's really loud in my hearing aids. That's okay. You just have to talk up. Yeah, Nolan.
This topic comes up frequently in my head where I think about knowledge, or I think about things that pull me away from God, right? And I'm a person that really is intrigued by science. I'm someone who is very intrigued with human anatomy. And I'm somebody that connects two things together that a lot of people try and separate, science and Christianity, right? Because they can get into fights with them. And I think of James chapter 3 and verse 13, where it talks about the wisdom from above. And what I realized is that my wisdom and what I'm searching for when I search these studies, what I'm looking for is something to just marvel at God. I'm looking for knowledge for God, not for just myself or something to be against God. Then that's where I have knowledge that I think God wants me to have. We frequently run into issues where we're talking about physical objects. I immediately think of my phone. That brings a lot of knowledge that I don't need to have. And you can call it knowledge, or you can just call it distractions, right? But when I think about, I don't want to say all these things are bad, but there is a way to understand that there is a way to have wisdom and use it for God. And the way he says it is, who is wise and who is understanding among you? He should show his works by good conduct with wisdom's gentleness. But if you have bitter envy, selfish ambition in your heart, don't brag and deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic.
Excellent point. Well said. Well said. You know, your phone can be a tool that has a very good use. I couldn't find anything in Eugene if I didn't have my phone because I'm not very good at, somehow I can't visualize what the map of Eugene looks like. And I have to put in, every time I take Tilly to the groomer, I have to put in how to get to the groomer. Your phone can be a tool. It can also be, if we don't use it properly, something that gets us in trouble, just like Nolan was saying. Even good things can be, when they get out of place, they become something evil. Yeah, Carol.
They just started advertising. It's a new gambling app for your phone. It wasn't bad enough that people had to get up off of their rear and go down to the bar or go down to the grocery store to buy their scratch-off tickets or whatever. Now the poor suckers are going to be having it on their phones and talk about lack of control, how it can get them into trouble. Oh, I'm so sorry for those people who are going to get led down that road, because it'll be so easy for them to get sucked in now.
Yeah. You know, when I first got a phone, I was just amazed with the game Tetris. And I used to play Tetris all the time. And I finally decided I needed to get that off of my phone so I couldn't play it anymore. And you know what my grandson's response was? They wanted to use my phone to play games. And I said, I don't have any games on my phone. And my grandson looked at me and said, what's the matter? Don't you like kids? So if you look on my computer, I have no games on my computer. I can't even play solitaire on my computer. It can be a distraction. So I just took it off. And I don't miss it. But if it's there, I would probably play it. And I love playing Scrabble. So words with the game that gets me in trouble right now is Words with Friends. It's a computerized version of Scrabble. Got to watch out for those things. And it's not just a phone. It's not just TV. It's not just electronic stuff. Other things cause us, they draw us away from God. Yeah, Bill?
I don't have a cell phone. I don't want one. And I people say, why don't you have one? You need to get one. Get with the times. Too many people will tell me, I can't live without a cell phone. You've got to have a cell phone. It's not a necessity to life.
Yeah, okay.
It's an idol.
It certainly can become one. That's absolutely true. Absolutely true. I read something somewhere that people would rather do without food than doing without their cell phone.
Yeah.
Now that's sad. But it's not just phones. Yeah, it's a lot of things that can lead us away from God. Could be television, could be phones, but there's just a lot of things. I want to move on. Next thing Philip says we need to remove from our life to prepare our heart to really be zealous for God is to remove people that promote sin. Maybe that's one of the hardest things for us to realize. There are some people that are in our lives that just try to lead us away from God. Yeah, Bill.
Bad companions corrupt good morals. I mean, that's an old adage that I've heard ever since I was first a believer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the truth.
Sure.
You know, sometimes, I'd say some of the greatest brethren in the fellowship have come from a very bad place in their life and just completely changed direction.
Yeah.
Somebody helped them get there.
Yeah. Nolan.
We just need to make sure that we're paying attention to the word promote. We don't want to stay away from people that sin.
Right.
That's true.
We want to say to people that promotes it.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, along that line, I mean, we have to have a relationship with other people in the world. We have to have, I mean, if you have a parent or a spouse or a child that you feel like promotes sin, you still have to have that familiar relationship with them. And we have to have a relationship with people. So he mentions here setting healthy boundaries. And I think that's where it gets difficult, is because we're not, I'm not, and have it, I think I'm better about it now, but I used to be really bad about not being able to set boundaries with relationships and saying, you know, I can have this relationship with this person, but it has to be defined this way. I can't let that get out of bounds. So setting those healthy boundaries is really hard. Sometimes it's easier to just write people off, but I don't think we're called as Christians to do that. I really don't. So it's hard to say removing them, but maybe removing that defining relationship so that we can redefine it, so that we're setting healthy boundaries for ourselves and protecting ourselves and protecting that person too. You know, I mean, and if we do that, I mean, we need to be praying for the other person and trying to help the other person, but at the same time, setting those healthy boundaries.
Yeah. Dean?
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's part of it. I think that we can remove, so we have college buddies, or we have high school buddies. We have ladies that go on girls' trips. If part of that trip is drinking and getting out of control and going to strip clubs, and then you need to remove that, right? You need to remove that. But in your day-to-day, I think of the world that I live in. I work in a blue-collar world where you have a lot of people. And for a lot of times, we just accepted the fact that when men got together, they were pigs. And I struggle. I hire young ladies. I raised young ladies. I coached young ladies. And early on, people would come in, these men would come in, and they would make these comments about, oh, must be nice, or those types of things. And you kind of shy away from how to deal with it now. And I'll be honest, I'm indignant. When you come into my shop and you make a comment about the fact that I have a young lady working for me, and all of the side comments, and I tell you, you need to get out. So in that, people that promote sin, we need to stop allowing them. So if we have a group of people we hang out with, and men in general need to step up, I think, in this world, and not be a part of conversations that are inappropriate conversations about women, and most of the time about little girls. You know, and women can do the same thing. There's all these types of things, but we have to stand firm. So when you bring those things up in conversation, I'm going to make you feel uncomfortable about it because it's inappropriate. And so I think that we can prepare ourselves for this zealous work by, we don't have to have a holier than thou attitude. We just have to stand our ground and say, that's not, I had that happen Friday. I left work so irritated at this individual that comes in and makes comments about my female employees. You know, he was a good customer for a long time. Well, I don't care if he comes back. I told him he can't come back. If he's going to talk like that, it's not going to work. So we have to stand our ground.
Yeah, and you make a really good point, because the hardest time to do this is when that person brings us a benefit. And then he talks about passing benefits. You know, it was important to have horses and chariots back then. And Josiah said, no, we're not going to, we're going to get rid of all of that, because it leads us to sin. And the hardest time, at least in my life, to set a boundary is when I really need that person because they're a good customer and they provide a third of my business, and I really don't want to anger them. That's hard. But we have to be willing to do that if we're going to pursue Zion. Yeah, Harold.
The first thing I thought of was Carolyn Brown, who always named sin. She would always know that she was in a situation. She'd say, "Get thee behind me, Satan." And the next thing I thought of was when Jesus said that, and I believe it was to Peter, when Peter said, "May it never be," which is sort of what Kim's point is. He told the action, the sin, to get thee behind me. But he still had a relationship. He just said, if you want to have a relationship with me, you can't do this. You can't not say what God says is true. You cannot say that it isn't true.
Yeah.
And so when you do that, then go away.
When we think about people in our lives that promote sin, I feel for a child who is growing up in a household where they are expected to participate in sin. And, you know, you still have to say, you're my dad. I will take care of you to the end of your life. You are my dad, but I will not be a part of that. Those are really hard steps, but we have to be willing to take them. So you have to maintain relationships. I mean, the fact that somebody is a rank promoter of sin and wants you to be involved in it does not obviate that they might be your brother. And you still have to have a relationship with them based on the fact that they're your brother. So you can't just cut them out of your life. Sometimes it would be easier if you could cut them out of your life, but you can't. You have to take care of them. And I have a great deal of sympathy for people who have to go through that. I have been blessed tremendously with two sisters who do everything that they can to keep me on the straight and narrow. Okay? And I know that there are people who have family members that just try to pull them away from God. I count my blessings every day that I don't have to face that. But I know that some people do. And it's just not easy. What about the places where you sin? Do you ever think about avoiding some places? I mean, if your problem with sin, if your the thing that draws you away from God is a gambling habit, don't go home beside the track. Okay? Find a different way to get home. I know it might be out of your way. That's okay. Go out of your way. But don't go to the track and expect that you're not going to have a difficulty with that. If your problem is drunkenness, don't eat in a pub. There's nothing wrong with eating pub food. There's nothing wrong with going to a pub to eat the food. But if you have a problem, if that's something that tempts you to move away from God, don't go there. Yeah, Dean.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about this, and I think that our mind always goes to those things, gambling, and it goes to drinking. I was thinking of sporting events. There's a lot of individuals that are very passionate about sports. And because they're passionate about sports, morals goes out the window, especially coaches. Winning is more important than teaching your children, your team, about fair gameplay, you know, it's my niece and I joke all the time, just to rile up her mother, that, you know, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. But that's an attitude in sports, isn't it? Or we have the parent that sits on the side that says, take them out, or whatever it is, you get into this. So it can be as simple as a soccer game or a baseball game. I played golf with a group of guys, and we used to do it on a regular basis. And then they started to get good at golf, and I wasn't blessed with that. But with getting good at golf came frustration. And frustration became throwing clubs and cursing at your ball, and it wasn't fun anymore. You know, so we have to look at all those things. Maybe it's our job. Maybe it's the place that we work. And we put up with that influence in our life for a paycheck. You know, it's so I think it's really easy to go. I mean, obviously those are the easy ones, you know, to look at a bar, look at, I mean, there's so many other things that a person can get involved in, but it could be simple things.
Yeah. You know, don't go to football games if that's what tends to drive you away from God. Now, SC will never drive you away from God. I'm just teasing. Yeah, Bill.
Yeah, that was something I was thinking about. If you're a devoted sports fan and it dominates your thoughts, it dominates your time, and it whether you forsake the worship or not, it's always in your heart and in your mind what the next game is, what the championship's going to be. All these things, you know, and see these young men that are playing their games. They're always on a Sunday. Well, the games aren't every day, and some of those young men are pretty devoted believers. It's not an all-the-time thing. It's a job to them.
Oh, yeah. That's true. So sometimes
it's not 40 hours a week or 8 hours every day or anything like that. But
absolutely.
If you're a fan, you can just go overboard.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Second thing he did, the point that he makes, is not only did he remove those things from his life so that they didn't pull it away from God, but he removed them forever. That's why he burned the bones, or he burned men's bones on the altars, because that defiled the altar. It could never be used again. So he didn't just move it to the back of his closet and hang on to it in case he decided to go back and need that again. I have all of these clothes hanging in my closet that don't fit me anymore. And I just can't bring myself to get rid of them. I'll never again be able to wear a shirt with a 15-inch collar. Why on earth am I keeping it?
Favorite shirt's a mighty powerful thing.
That's true. That's true.
Just don't button the collar.
Can't button the collar. Can't even wear it with the collar open anymore. Okay? We've got to get rid of these things, and we've got to do it forever. And the other thing that he says is he replaced them with things that brought him closer to God. He started to celebrate the Passover. Passover hadn't been celebrated for something like 50 years. And all of a sudden, Josiah restores the Passover. Can't talk about putting things out of your life without talking about the things that you put in to replace it. Nature abhors a vacuum. And We can put things out of our lives, but we better find something to replace it with. Okay, we're out of time, but let me close with, this is Proverbs 1. And again, this is passage that Philip suggested you look at. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, in justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying and the words of the wise and the riddles, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Hear, my son, your father's instruction. Forsake not your mother's teaching. They're a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck. Find good people that will lead you closer to God and cherish him. And I think that's the point that he's making.